Issues Etc. regular guest Pastor Stephen Parks on why your congregation should join the Issues Etc. 300.
If I could, I'd just like to challenge any Lutheran pastors that are listening to consider becoming one of the congregations that supports Issues Etc. My own congregation is a very small church, and I know it can be difficult to try and budget $1,000 a year to become one of the Issues Etc. 300. But if you're being blessed by this, as I know you are, and if your congregation is being blessed by this, as I know that it is, I submit to bring it to the congregation to prayerfully consider supporting the outreach of Issues Etc., not only here in the United States, but also around the world. Thank you so much for what you do.
Please consider adding the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. to your congregation's mission or advertising budget. Simply go to the promote page of our website, issuesetc.org. We're looking for 300 congregations to donate $1,000 to Issues Etc., the Issues Etc. 300.
I never once went to a meeting, never once issued a statement, never once gave an endorsement in the 2 years Prop 8 was going.
Well, let me just say this really clearly. We support Proposition 8. And if you believe what the Bible says about marriage, you need to support Proposition 8.
When a university invites somebody for an honorary degree, for a commencement speaker, what you are really saying to the students is, this man, we agree with him, we hold him up as a model to you.
The battles that we fought in the 80s, conflicts with the culture, humanly speaking, we have lost all those battles.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
We get a lot of questions here at Issues Etc., some of them more weighty than others. This afternoon, we're going to begin with a more weighty question from one of our listeners who's emailed us. It's always email on Friday afternoon's first thing, listener email. The question has to do with baptism and who should be baptized. That, among other questions, comments, criticism, and praise from our listeners. Listener email is up first this Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. It is Friday afternoon, the 17th of April. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, first, it is listener email, then blog of the week, and then soundbite of the week, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MYIE, or our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. As I mentioned, we do have soundbite of the week coming up in about a half an hour. Four soundbites. We'll play them for you, and we ask you to listen to them, and once you've heard all four, you can call and vote for which you think ought to be the Issues Etc. soundbite of the week, or you can email your vote to us as well, 1-877-623-6943, or talkback@issuesetc.org. The entire second hour of the program today is devoted to tolerance. What is it really? Have you ever noticed that those who tout tolerance the most practice it the least? I mean real tolerance, not what passes for tolerance. Is tolerance agreeing with someone? Is tolerance saying, okay, you have your truth, even though I don't think it is true? What is real tolerance? Greg Kokol of Stand to Reason will join us to talk about tolerance in the second hour of the program today. But first, listener email.
Here's Alan in Fort Worth, Texas. This is a question I'm discussing with a friend. He is of the mindset of that children shouldn't be baptized because they are unable to confess their faith. I'm trying to help him see the problems with this. I have found some passages in the Bible, but thus far, none has been convincing enough for him to see the problems with his viewpoint, writes Alan in Fort Worth, Texas.
Well, I guess the question I've got is the objection that's being raised here is that infants can't believe, or that infants can't say that they believe. If the problem simply is that they cannot say that they believe, or they can't articulate it well enough, then we've got a bigger problem than just infants. I mean, there are people who lose the ability over time, I'm talking about, say, the elderly, the infirm, to articulate their faith. Let's say for the sake of argument, I mean, how many deathbed baptisms would there be? I mean, someone who doesn't believe in an infant baptism certainly would believe in a deathbed baptism. I mean, how old do you have to be baptized? Okay, but how many deathbed baptisms could there be if everybody who desired baptism, perhaps at the moment of death or near it, couldn't clearly articulate the faith that they have. You know, the practice for some time in the church, it was not a good practice, but it was a practice nonetheless. It was a lousy practice, in fact, was close to death baptism. You waited because their mixed up view of baptism had them believing that it kind of took care of everything, but from that point on, you really were in risk of screwing it up. So you waited as long as you could to be baptized to kind of ensure the fact that it would do the trick and you wouldn't screw it up. So you waited in some cases until moments before death. Terrible practice. But think about it. The average person who says that an infant shouldn't be baptized because they're too young wouldn't have a problem with baptizing someone who would be, quote unquote, too old. But many of those who are old are kind of in the place of infants, aren't they? They're no longer able to articulate the faith that they have. Now, if that's the objection, then where in the Bible does it require that someone be able to articulate, verbally articulate the faith before they receive baptism? That's an assumption you may make about baptism. And it certainly is good that someone can confess a faith. This is why, historically, and this is not just some recent innovation, this is a long practice in the church, going back to the apostles themselves, for which we have record, that when they baptized infants, and yes, they did baptize infants in the apostolic church, we have record of it. When they baptized infants, knowing that the child could not speak for himself or herself, they spoke for them, which is what churches that still baptize infants still do. They speak for the child, knowing that the child cannot speak the faith that they have yet. Here's the faith. We know the faith that's been given. We know what baptism gives. Let's speak it together on behalf of this child. Now, if the real objection is that infants can't believe, you've got to navigate a pretty treacherous scriptural minefield to prove that. Because Jesus certainly believed that infants could believe. He talked about these little ones, and the word there he uses, babes in arms, babies unable to walk on their own, pre-toddler babies, infants, these little ones who believe in me. Jesus thought babies could believe. So take up your argument with Jesus.
Brady in Wisconsin, as I have been evaluating doctrine and practice during this Easter season, I have become appalled at the lack of Christian imagery within our homes for Easter. We see eggs, jelly beans, bunnies, but almost no homes have an empty tomb, cross, or really anything that proclaims Christ's resurrection, which last time I checked was a pretty big deal. Even worse, the non-Christian symbols are explicitly proclaimed in our churches, aka the yearly Easter egg hunt. What is a church to do? What is a family with young kids to do? Can this be addressed on Issues, etc.? The history of the bunny eggs, etc., and the implications of doctrine and practice, writes Brady in Wisconsin.
We probably should get someone on to talk about the bunny. I mean, can you think of a more innocuous symbol for a holiday than a cute little bunny? I have no idea where the Easter bunny came from. I suspect it's probably a symbol of spring that got folded into the Easter holiday. The egg, symbol of new life. And there are all sorts of other symbols there. What I find most interesting is we don't have our kids hunt for eggs anymore. We have them hunt for egg-shaped containers of candy. When was the last time someone actually laid out real eggs for the kids to hunt for? Now, they're shaped like eggs, but they're not. And the closest thing you get to an egg is maybe one of those Cadbury eggs that's delicious, by the way. Don't feed them to your dog. That happened once at the Wilkin household. We paid dearly for what we now only refer to as the Cadbury egg incident. We paid dearly. We'll look into it. Easter's a long season. We can talk to somebody about the symbols of Easter. But it's true. Christians tend to gravitate toward the cultural symbols of, they're not pagan, they're not wrong, they're just cultural symbols of Easter, and I think it is for lack of a better symbol. But let me say something about what symbol we might want to pick. Someone says, maybe the best symbol is an empty tomb. That's not bad, although, and it is interesting that we have nativity scenes but not resurrection scenes. Maybe someone should think about manufacturing and marketing, along with nativity scenes, some resurrection scenes. And while you're at it, why not a few crucifixion scenes? I think that would be dandy. If we can depict Jesus' birth with little figurines, miniature shepherds and sheep, and Mary's and Joseph's, then we can certainly depict Christ's crucifixion the same way, can't we? Or his resurrection. So some innovative, entrepreneurial-minded person, get to work on that. The empty cross has been suggested by some as a good Easter symbol. It isn't, because an empty cross doesn't say anything except someone may be here, once was here, could have been here. No. That's why in our Christian symbolism, we keep our tombs empty and our crosses full. You see what I'm saying? We like our crosses with a Jesus on it because that's what really happened there. And we like our tombs empty because he's no longer there. Keep your crosses full, your tomb's empty.
All right. Rob in Duluth, Minnesota. Say, Jeff and Todd, in the car the other day, my wife and I were listening to some episodes I had downloaded onto my Palm. And my wife, also a big Issues fan, made the comment that you really do have such a good variety of guests on your show that make it very interesting. That was the show with Heather Roush about dealing with an unplanned pregnancy. Not a hard-hitting theological topic, but interesting, practical, and providing a great variety and rounded overall presentation. There's a lot for everyone on your show, and I, as well as many others, truly appreciate it. It's part of Rob's email from Duluth. I'll let you deal with that one first.
Well, Rob, thank you so much. And that's exactly, I've always said, one of the great things that makes Issues, etc., the kind of show it is, the great, strong, solid show it is the broad scope of topics and guests. They go together. Topics dictate guests, and guests often bring the best topics. We have one of the largest stable of guests of any interview-based talk show I know of. And I don't say that as a – it's just a fact. A very large stable of guests, and therefore a very broad scope of topics. We try and be as broad as possible. And I think it is the strength. The number one strength is that we are Christ-centered, cross-focused. The second, and a very close second of that, is the scope of topics and guests. We got some more from that email. We'll get to the rest of the email when we come back from this break. We're listening to your listener email. I'm responding. You can also chime in if you'd like. We're coming to you live this Friday afternoon. It's April the 17th. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MY-IE or talkback at issuesetc.org. More listener email after this.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Have you heard of the CLCC, the Confessional Lutherans for Christ's Commission? We're deeply involved in providing seminars to build up Christ's church with education and training for the laity. So far, we've held seminars on confessional topics at churches in Minnesota, Utah, Oregon, and Washington, and planning is underway to hold seminars in several other states coast to coast. Visit theclcc.org. Check us out. Get on the mailing list, or better yet, join us. See how your church can host a seminar, too. Go to theclcc.org.
On behalf of the staff of Issues, etc., thanks to the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring Issues, etc. back, Pastor K. Michael Siminger, Manita Gauthier, Claire Marie Hopkins, Steve Overn, Virgil Grammons, Karen Grammons, Stephen Grammons, Cheryl Davis, David and Becky Bolke, and Tim Dillingham. Thanks for your support.
We're not funded by LCMS, Inc. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
My local Christian bookstore just sells Jesus schlock. Where can I find good material? We at NewReformationPress.com are committed to providing a hand-picked selection of books and teaching materials that educate, inform, and entertain while uniquely maintaining a relentless focus on the gospel. We believe that these forgotten doctrines and their scriptural emphases can not only enrich individual Christians and revive the church, but also address the deepest needs of our culture. Discover our growing library of resources by Dr. Rod Rosenblatt of the White Horse Inn radio program, including his powerful address, The Gospel for Those Broken by the Church, available exclusively at newreformationpress.com, or the Big Picture audio presentation, Bible in an Hour, by Pastor Wade Butler. Learn the center and scope of redemptive history and scripture in just 1 hour. And of course, be sure not to miss our selection of t-shirts, gifts, and artwork as well. NewReformationPress.com. Finally, Reformation theology made accessible.
The question really has to be, who's the greatest betrayer? And we could all say, well, I guess I'm tied with Judas, with Peter, with the other disciples.
If people make bombs in their bedroom, if people shoot heroin into their arms in their bedroom, that's a matter of public concern and not just private concern. Even apparently private acts have large public consequences.
All that that indicated was that Mormon bosoms burn at a higher centigrade than non-Mormon bosoms. It doesn't say anything about the truth of any affirmation that they might make.
Why don't we blame Winston Churchill and FDR for focusing too narrowly on defeating the Nazis to the neglect of other issues? Given a choice, I'd rather pro-lifers focus on at least one great moral issue than waste their resources trying to fix all of them.
There's just a taste of our candidates for Soundbite of the Week this week coming up here in about 10 minutes. You'll hear all four of them in their entirety and then have a chance to vote for your pick for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, 1-877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-I-E. The best vote, be it by email or by phone, during Soundbite of the Week, will get the LPR bundle package. It's an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. travel mug, an Issues Etc. pin, and an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. The LPR bundle package, the best vote during Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week this afternoon. Our email address, talkback@issuesetc.org. Speaking of email, there's more to that email that you read before the break.
Back to Rob in Duluth, Minnesota. Oh, and you said you like criticism as well, Rob writes. One thing I would like to point out, maybe it's just me, but in your comment line segments, I frequently find it hard to hear the people who call in and leave comments. That may be due to the quality of the phone connection on their end, but perhaps there is something you can do to magnify or amplify the comments from your callers, writes Rob in Duluth.
Well, that's a good question. Have you noticed that? I mean, I don't know. Have you gone back and listened to a comment line segment?
Gone back and listened to them?
Yeah, to see if...
Well, they sound bad when we air them live, so I don't need to really go back and listen to them. We need to put a disclaimer on there. Please, no cell phone calls on
unless you're in your truck and blowing your horn.
Well, that of course. Right. If you're blowing your horn, truck drivers, that rule doesn't apply. We love truck drivers here at Issues, etc. But yeah, no cell phone. A landline would be preferably, not a cordless phone. But we are using the Wilkin, answering machine from like 20 years ago.
Right.
Home.
I mean, people get the idea that cheap. We have some sort of bank of phones. This is a phone and an answering machine I dragged out of my basement that I'd found useless at home for about the last 10 years, dragged it out and brought it in for it sits at the other end of the comment line, and we feed that into the board and get the recording. So as bad as the sending phone line might be, the receiving one is not that great, and then of course it's got to go through the rest of the rigmarole, and we're doing our best, but that's the kind we need to hear. That kind of stuff, we need to hear that kind of feedback from listeners. If you're having a hard time hearing it, it doesn't do you a lot of good, does it? So we'll try and make it as clear as we possibly can.
But please, use the best phone in your home, not a cell phone, preferably a corded phone.
Yeah, stay off the speaker phones, please.
And stay off the speaker phones for sure.
You know, this is only what Jesus, Jeff. This is only what Jeff tells every guest, every day. Are you on a landline? Are you calling from a cell phone? Are you on a speaker phone? Is this your cell? Because we want to make sure we have the absolute best connection. Although I must say, the best connection we've ever had in the history of Issues, Etc., was
Dr. Zimmerman talking on his
speakerphone, and you never would have been able to tell.
Dr. Zimmerman up in Michigan. Yeah.
And some of our guests have notoriously bad phone lines.
Right.
Really, really bad.
Well, once today is Greg Kokel. We're going to have he's kind of always sounds overmodulated. We've tried different phones. We've tried it. I think it's a line issue.
We've noticed
Scott
pastors,
Klusendorf.
Pastors with lots of facial hair and beards, they tend to rub their beards up against the mouthpiece of their phone and make all sorts of interesting.
That would be like David Peterson and Arthur Just.
Yeah, and Jeff will go to them when we're at a break and say, "Could you lower your phone a little bit because we're getting a little noise off of your ample facial hair." I mean, I guess it's just, one of those things of having a beard.
Here's an email from Dave in Minnesota regarding your comment a few weeks ago about having pizza on Fridays and being fatigued on Friday afternoons. Dave writes, "I can certainly understand how overreacting can make one lethargic. I am often guilty of I can certainly understand how overeating can make one lethargic. I am often guilty of overeating when it comes to pizza. But should I deny pizza to others because of my shortcomings? Perish the thought. Banning pizza can only be considered pizza hate speech. I agree, Dave. Such a ban would deny others of a culinary delight, which they no doubt need to sustain their victual well-being.
All right, the two
victual word, by
yes,
the way.
Yes.
Wow, this we do have the smartest listeners of radio because I've never seen that word in my entire life.
The two of you heard me loud and clear ban pizza on Fridays. Did you not? So I show up today, and Craig's car is not in the parking lot. And I start to get an inkling that he's out picking something up. Sometimes he goes to the post office. Sometimes he goes to the bank. I walk in. Where's Craig? He's picking up the pizza. I'd brought in a nice, sensible salad, which I ate. And then he brings in the pizza. And do I even live by my own rules? Craig, no. I had a couple pieces of pizza then. So I'm kind of half sleepy. If I would have stuck with the salad like I do every day, everything would have been great. But you tempted me. You're not a temptress. You're a tempter. That's what you are.
Well, you know, it was just more for Jeff and I.
It's true. Is it all gone?
No, I think Craig's going to take it home tonight to his party. He's going to watch the Blues hockey, St. Louis Blues hockey game tonight in the playoffs.
There we go.
Didn't invite you or me, did he?
No. Well, you know, people get this impression that we socialize.
Well, Craig and I do.
That's true.
It's just you.
I'm the recluse.
That's right.
Actually, I was the guy who went out to lunch with Craig and Frankie the other day. When Frankie, Craig's older brother, came by, they said, "Do you want to go down to Fridays?" And I said, "Absolutely." And we went, right? So I actually socialized. But that's a very rare thing for me.
I wanted to go too. However, a guest canceled out us like 2 hours before showtime. We won't go there. Dave continues writing about pizza. May I suggest that LPR rescind the pizza ban while requesting salad on pizza day? For those who feel that pizza will adversely affect their work, this way of dealing with the problem, quote, end quote, will no doubt work if the pizza is not in the same room with Pastor Wilkin. Enjoy, folks. I truly enjoy Issues, Etc., writes Dave in Minnesota.
Dave, thank you very much. Ban rescinded. Have all the pizza you want. It's fine. I was kind of hoping that he was going to get Jimmy John's. Jimmy John's is a sandwich place not very far from here, and I was kind of hoping that he was going to get Jimmy John's today. But no. No Jimmy John's. No imagination. He just comes in with that terribly tempting pizza.
Hey, I got a question for you. Do you think they have Emo's in Minnesota where Dave could possibly have a slice of some of the best pizza made in the world?
I don't know. Do they have Emo's, or is that just a St. Louis thing? Although I'll tell you what, people outside of St. Louis do know about it and do not think highly of St. Louis-style pizza. When I was in Texas, a local proprietor of a pizzeria, when he found out I was from the St. Louis area, spent a few minutes telling me how little he thought of St. Louis-style pizza. Before you go on with email, there's someone we need to thank. I have hanging on my wall. I'll pull it off so that Jeff can see it. Okay, this is a patch from the first Cavalry that was sent to us from Baghdad, from Paul in Baghdad, one of our listeners over there in Iraq. You see this, Jeff? This goes on my wall. This is a patch he sent us. The other thing he sent us, and Paul, thank you very much. Let me pull it off the wall so Jeff can see it. Perfectly, this is the perfect gift. It looks like a pair of dog tags from Camp Liberty, but it is in fact also a bottle opener. I think I'm going to take this out of the package and hang it around my neck permanently. That's a great idea. Although I don't have occasion to open, I mean, Scotch bottles open with the out, they just have screw tops.
What about chelada?
Doesn't come in a bottle.
I wouldn't know.
No.
And most normal people don't.
The reason they don't put chelada in a bottle is because then you could see what it looks like. And if you could see what it looks like, they wouldn't sell any.
Quickly, speaking of Paul, we just mailed your LPR bundle package. He won Sound by the Week a couple weeks ago. It's on its way to Baghdad, Iraq. Craig had to get some, like, sending something out of the country nowadays form that required, like, filling out a tax, you know, form or something, at April 15th deadline. But it was mailed this week, Paul. And by the way, in about 15 minutes, Sound by the Week, a chance for somebody to win an LPR bundle package this week.
Like of Paul their very Iraq. Own, yes.
Let's quickly, Barb in Arvada, Colorado. She said, "I made an online contribution last month, but I haven't received the Wilkins Sermon CD yet." I can answer that. About half of them, about 150 of them went out this week. The other 100 or so which is pretty exciting. That's with 250, probably more than that. I think close to 300 donors during the season of Lent. So the other half of those Lent and Easter sermon CDs will go out next week. But back to Barb, she says, I've rejoined the Lutheran Church after 40-plus years away, largely because of issues, etc., and the other resources you have recommended. This was a major step for me since I have a lot of negative baggage from my childhood in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Believe it or not, I never heard of the gospel for me growing up, which is why I left. I'm sick over what I see happening to LCMS Inc., but I have found a small confessional congregation where I hear the good news for me every Sunday. Keep up the good work, writes Barbara in Arvada, Colorado.
Well, Barbara, that's very good to hear. Glad we could help. And sounds like you and I are in exactly the same boat. A lot of negative baggage. Yours from long ago, mine from more recently. The thing that keeps me in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is the congregation where I worship. That the faithful pastors and congregations of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, many of them still are being faithful to God's word, those pastors faithful to their calls. Not all of them, but many of them. That's the real synod, as I call it, and that's what keeps me in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the faithful pastors and congregations.
Quickly, Eric in New Jersey, thought I would ask, any thoughts on when you might be able to restart the Issues, Etc. Reformation Club, the monthly giving program with premiums and things? In the near future, we plan on doing it. We've got the ability to donate monthly using automatic withdrawal, issuesetc.org, click donate. So that's the first part of the process, and then we'll start the Reformation Club here in the next couple months.
All right, blog of the week and soundbite of the week after this.
It's never been as easy as today, and it would make me happy when you've gone so far away.
The toilet seats are always up at LPR. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
On behalf of the staff of Issues, Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues, Etc. Eric Link, Helga Hemphill, Marianne Link, Christopher Staley, Stephen Yakman, Shane Opperman, Alan Grimens, Carolyn Grimens, Jennifer Alcock, and David Grimens. Thanks for your support.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
I've often heard it repeated, the Episcopal Church is in decline. If so, based on the following account, I can understand why. Catherine Hancock Ragsdale is the new dean of the Episcopal Divinity School. The Reverend gave a sermon declaring abortion a blessing, and those who work in the abortion industry, heroes, and even saints. During her sermon in Birmingham, Alabama, she said, "Abortion is a blessing, and our work is not done." Then she added, "Let me hear you say it," and repeated her comment again. Reverend Ragsdale has been on the board of radical pro-abortion groups like NAREL and the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. If this is her interpretation of Christ's view of innocent human life, the school's academic standards must be low indeed.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Will your church be one of the Issues, Etc. 300? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. We're looking for 300 congregations to pledge $1,000 to Issues, Etc. in their budgets. To find out more about the Issues, Etc. 300, click the Sponsors section of our website, issuesetc.org. You'll even find a one-page informational flyer. Please consider including Issues, Etc. in your church's mission or advertising budget. The Issues, Etc. 300.